Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to the Morning Beat.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Instead of AJ and Michaela, it's like Monday all over again.
It is.
You have Ryan Basham and myself, Shar Jossel.
It's wild. Look at us.
Bright and early at the 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time hour.
And I feel like we're pretty bright and bushy.
Yes. It's a good morning.
It
TGIF.
Is.
It's the last show of the last live show, I would say.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm
is that
not
right?
Sure.
Producer Vanessa, last live show of the year?
I'm not sure.
No, they're back next week.
Oh, well,
okay.
Just kidding. The last live show that matters.
Yeah. I'm so excited to be here, though. It's a Friday. I know I go out of town next week to Chicago to spend time with my family for the holidays, and I'm really looking forward to that. I looked at the calendar this morning, and I was like, Shar, get it together. You have 3 days, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and then you're out of here. I haven't done a laundry.
No.
I haven't gotten a mani-pedi. I haven't began packing. Like, my mind just isn't in the zone. Are you staying here for Christmas?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't travel on the holidays. That's the worst. Also, my dad goes to bed at, 8 p.m. Eastern, right? Ooh. He lives on the East Coast.
Yeah.
So when I'm there, he goes to bed at what feels like 5 p.m.
Yeah.
to me. So, I'm mostly bored out in the sticks in East Tennessee, you know? And I don't want to be there anyway. It's rural. It's cold.
Yeah.
Who wants that for their life?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's different situations for us because I'm going to Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I leave on the 20th, so I feel like I'm still in the clear.
Oh,
I come back on the 30th, though, so I might
be... Oh, no. On purpose?
Yeah, it might be... Well, I might push it back. I don't know.
I would. I mean, that sounds awful.
Yeah, it might be. But listen, this is what's coming up on today's show.
Yes.
I'm so excited. We're going to be talking a little bit later about the one question you should never ask a single person. Listen, I'm a single Sally.
Mm-hmm.
Basham,
same.
You're a single Sally.
So single.
So, yeah.
Call
we're gonna
me.
We're going to definitely be... call me, beat me if you want to reach me. We're going to be talking about that. Plus, Elon Musk has recently banned, suspended notable journalists, all for covering him. I believe that's what's coming in. So
what
so
about First Amendment? What's
so
happening?
So much for free speech,
come
Elon.
On.
We're going to be
together.
Talking about that a little bit later, but let's hop into some of the news on the beat.
Ooh, I love me some news on the beat on Friday morning. First up, and this really boils my blood, trans people's personal data is being sought by the Texas Attorney General. So Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton's staff this summer tried to gather information on transgender people in the state based on who had changed their gender on their driver's licenses. Someone from Paxton's office asked the Texas Department of Public Safety to provide a list of these residents, the Washington Post reports. Because of this request, the head of the department's driver license division emailed coworkers saying, this quote, need total number of changes from male to female and female to male for the last 24 months, broken down by month. We don't need driver's license numbers at first, but may need to have them later.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
That is, I need someone to step in. You know, history will repeat itself if people don't pipe up and step in.
Yeah, it's very pre-Gilead to me.
Yeah, it's very scary.
Super
very scary.
Well, moving on to something that's I guess, slightly better. There's an investigation into U.S. Women's Professional Soccer League, and it revealed widespread abuse. The Soccer League and its players' union have released a 128-page independent investigation report following a 14-month inquiry into accusations of, quote, discrimination, harassment, abuse of all kinds, and retaliation. So at least something's being done in this case, and progress hopefully will be made. And this is exciting for me because I'm a science nerd, free COVID tests are back for U.S. households. So the Biden administration is again making some free COVID-19 tests available to all U.S. households as it unveils its contingency plans for potential coronavirus surges this winter. So the moment that this became a thing, my roommate texted my other roommate and I, because we live in like a 3-bedroom house, and he got enough for all of us.
Okay, that's good.
The day of.
Because you know they're now calling it a triple-demic because there's COVID season, flu season, and the RSV that's taking control of the kids at the elementary school.
I just can't.
It's a wild time.
We're like a petri dish as a human race.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of humans are nasty, though. If you just observe human behavior, I mean, listen, you could go to any given bathroom and people aren't washing their hands still to this day.
No.
You know, so it's wild. Humans are nasty.
People, be sanitary, please. imagine the rest of us have OCD and we have to live with you. Moving on to the weather, it's 46 in New York today, 51 in Atlanta, 35 in Denver, 53 in Las Vegas, 55 in San Fran, and 66 in Palm Springs. Now, Char, what's the vibe of the day?
The vibe of the day today is brought to us by Audre Lorde, who is one of my favorite authors, but she's a self-described, I want to note this, a self-described black lesbian mother warrior poet. Get into it.
Yes.
So the vibe of the day today is, it's not our differences that divide us, it is our inability to recognize, accept, and celebrate those differences. Mm. And I can't think of a more timely vibe of the day, given all that's going on.
Yes.
So the holidays are approaching. We know that if you celebrate Christmas, for example, that is next Saturday.
I can't.
What the hell?
I was doing Christmas shopping in the car on the way here because I took an Uber.
Uh-huh.
I was shopping. I bought two things for somebody for Christmas on the way
really?
Here.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm hoping it gets here in time.
I still have three gifts to get. But everybody else is covered. It's a little rough this season because I feel like Beyonce is going to drop those tour tickets any moment now. Nevertheless, Ryan, you are single.
So very.
I am single.
Mm-hmm.
So very.
So very.
Even though I did just start talking to a very nice man a few days ago on the Hinge.
Oh.
And we're still in it. Like, we're going to check in later today, but that's neither here nor there.
Oh, you're
going
to check in later. You have plans to check in.
You never know. So according to this article on the New York Post, they kind of formulated questions that you should never ask single people. And so, Ryan, I have to know before I launch into this, what is the question? What's the main question that you hate being asked?
So my dad is super cool with me being gay, but also, you know, some of the language around it, I think he's still uncomfortable with all these many years later.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes, well, so are you seeing anybody? And then, you know, the underpinning of that is, why are you still single? When am I getting grandchildren? Like, it's baked in.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, well, I'm not right now. And then I change the subject or find a reason to walk out of the room. I love my dad, but I don't want to have to talk about that with him.
Yeah.
You know?
My dad still will kind of, I guess I could say gaslighting. I'm trying to get away from that word in particular because it's so overused.
Yeah.
But my dad wants grandchildren. And I'm like, you need to back up. Like, I'm one of three girls.
Yeah.
And me and my sisters are all career women.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not interested in that. And only one of my sisters has a boyfriend right now. Like, we're all dating. Mm-hmm. But only one of my sisters has a boyfriend. And so it's kind of odd because, I mean, my dad is 70. God bless his heart. But my mother never really bothers me about it. As a matter of fact, most of the questions I get about relationships come from my cousins.
Really?
Yes, it is so weird.
That is bizarre.
They want to know why I'm not booed up. And I said, who's to say I'm not booed up? My private life
is
my private life.
Are you evasive?
I'm very private. Only because in my experience as a woman who's trans, men that I date, it's listen, it's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. But I also know how people tend to sensationalize things.
Yeah.
But I only try to date men who are, like, sure of themselves, because I'm also not here to be having to do all that extra emotional labor.
Oh, yeah.
But I do know how people sensationalize things. And so even cousins, yes, mind your business. You have no idea what I'm doing.
I mean, my dad has 4 siblings. They all have kids. So I have a million cousins. And some of them have kids. Yeah, so we have massive reunions. And I'm the only LGBTQ one in the whole family.
Okay.
So, like, we're all very open. They care about me. They're curious about my life. But also, there is that curiosity piece, because they all have very cishet lives.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I went out to a gay bar when I was in D.C. last, and one of my aunts was like, where, because I stayed with her. She's like, where are you? I was like, oh, I'm at a gay bar. And she goes, awesome, get your gay on.
Is that the text message that you posted on your
yes,
story?
Yes.
That was hilarious.
Yes.
I must say that, like, I'm closer to my mom's side than I am my father's. My mother is the youngest of 10. Mm. Everyone has children who has children who has children. And there are only 3 LGBT people. I have a cousin, a male cousin who's in his 50s who's openly gay.
Okay.
And then, like, my best friend, like, my sister, she's my cousin, but she's like, we were raised like siblings.
Yeah.
She's a lesbian. And then there's me, the trans girl. Mm-hmm. Now, mathematically, the math isn't math.
Yeah, no. Yeah. No.
And my mom's the youngest of 10.
Oh, wow.
And everyone has children who has children who has children for the most part. And there's only 3.
How is that possible?
It's not.
Should be studied.
Yeah, it's not possible. People live their lives, and then when they come together with family, you know, things are, you know.
Yeah, but
different.
You would think with 3, everybody else might feel comfortable.
Would think, because my family's very accepting. I mean, granted, we do have it's heavily religious, but my family, like, for example, never misgenders or dead names me ever.
Really?
Ever.
Wow.
And I thought that I would have more issues with my uncles than my aunts when I stepped into the truth of who I knew myself to be.
Yeah.
And more of the heat came from my aunts.
Really?
My uncles got right with the program. I was so shocked. And these are pastors and deacons. They got right with the program.
Do you know why?
I have no idea. Well, with some of my aunts, I know that they have some, one of them in particular, has some trauma that she applied to the whole community.
Oh.
Something happened like with her ex-husband, and she applies it like, so it's, I feel like I'm catching strays because mm-hmm. she's still upset
she's
40 years
later. She's
coming
from a broken, hurt place.
Yeah, and she needs to heal that. But nevertheless, we've gone totally off
topic. We really have. Not totally off topic, but basically off topic.
But I mean, the question that you proposed from your father is the question that the New York Post is reporting. And the question is, why haven't you gotten yourself a partner yet?
Mm-mm.
It's annoying. And we know that typically it comes, you know, with good intentions.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's passive aggressive, depending on who's asking. But the New York Post has created a list of reasons why you should relish in being single this season.
Okay.
And so they're shifting perspective. I'm going to read to you a few of these.
Okay.
And so it's like, your sweet freedom. You have freedom. You don't answer to anyone. You can come and go as you please. You don't have to, you feed yourself. Life is typically easy when you have one mouth to feed.
Yeah.
And you only consider yourself.
Yeah.
And that's not to say being selfish, but you know, if you're not dating anyone, like if I want to have popcorn and wine tonight, I can have that for dinner tonight. You know, it only sucks when I need a plus one.
Yeah.
I go to all these lovely events and the only plus ones I have are my best friends or I go solo.
Mm-hmm.
They have, like I said, it's all over the place. They have your bank account, for example. Your bank account doesn't take a hit. Imagine some of the pressures. Let me ask you this, Ryan Basham. When do you buy your partner? Well, I won't even say your partner. Let's say you started dating someone on Halloween. Are you getting them a Christmas gift? Like, what does that look like?
I mean, probably, because I love giving gifts.
But at what level? Like, how much money are you spending if you just started dating someone on Halloween?
It would be just enough to feel thoughtful, but not enough to feel uncomfortable because it might be too much.
Okay. And so what does that look like?
I feel like...
Like, do you have an example or no?
It would be like... Like a token related to something we had laughed about,
okay.
kind of a thing. Or like if we both really enjoyed a movie,
yeah.
like maybe The Incredibles, say, that the Disney movie Incredibles, maybe I would get them a Christmas tree ornament of the little Incredibles family.
Okay.
Something thoughtful,
yes.
but not too expensive.
Not too heavy. You're not getting a MacBook or,
no.
you know,
a trip to Venice.
Trip. Yeah,
no.
No. I always find that interesting because that's a debate that pops up every year amongst cishet people and LGBTQ
what about you,
plus
though?
People. If I start dating someone on Halloween, it gets complicated. If I want to give them a gift, I don't know. It depends on if I feel like it's going going somewhere and if it's worthwhile. And I also feel like that's something that needs to be discussed. Because if I'm giving a gift, I'm not giving a gift to get one back.
Yes.
But I also would like one back.
Yeah.
I'm going to feel some type of way if I give you a gift and you're like, oh, Char, I didn't plan for this.
I mean, I'm Southern. So, you know, there's a whole song and dance about if you're going to get a gift, are they going to get you a gift? Like, there's some pride. Because if you get someone a gift and they didn't think to get you one of the primary things they're going to feel is guilt.
Yeah.
You know?
Really quickly, before we get out of here, here are some of the rebuttals that the New York Post has reported, has wrote. So it's, one of them is, why are you still married? Which you can add, there are some people who get complacent and you can tell from the outside looking in, like, girl, you don't even want to be here, so why are you still married? Some of the funny quips that they put is like, I've devoted my life to my cats. I'm not taking any questions at this time. Thank you. I guess you can turn into, you know, the White House press secretary. Uh-huh. I'm done with questions. Thank you. Why have one flavor when you can try them all? That's something I'd say. That's something I'd say.
Hilarious.
And then last but not least, all my boyfriends are already married. Now that'll shake it up. Well, welcome back to The Morning Beat. I'm Char Jossel here with Ryan Basham, filling in for AJ Gibson and Michaela Gordon.
I mean, hey, you know, you're welcome, y'all.
Yes, you are welcome. It's a good Friday.
It's a great Friday.
Ryan, another day, another musky story.
I can't with this.
You know I call him musky.
Yeah.
This one particularly hits close to home, given that I am an award-winning journalist myself.
Yes, you are.
Thank you very much.
Let me get your trophy real quick.
No, I really am.
I know you are.
Okay.
But I'm also teasing you.
Thank you. I love you for that. Twitter has suspended reporters from the Washington Post, New York Times, and other publications who wrote about Elon Musk. One reporter said he had, quote, no idea why he was booted from the platform. Now, this just happened yesterday. It was sudden. It was without warning. And it was a host of prominent tech journalists, including many, like I mentioned, that kind of openly criticized Elon Musk. So these accounts were for the New York Times, a journalist named Ryan Mack, Drew Harwell from the Washington Post, Donnie O'Sullivan of CNN, Matt Binder of Mashable, which I have been featured in, Aaron Rupar is an independent journalist, excuse me, all of which disappeared on Thursday evenings, as, like I said, several others did. All of these reporters have commented on his $44 billion takeover of Twitter. And then there's even been, you know, that account. Remember that one account that was tracking his private jet?
Yes.
Muskie got rid of them, too. Because remember, they were reporting on everybody's carbon footprint. Kylie Jenner, Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Which was rightfully so. You know, Kylie Jenner was flying 3 minutes.
100%.
From Calabasas to Van Nuys.
And the carbon footprint of that is
disgusting.
Disgusting. But it's not like the people have been doing this about, like, Russian oligarchs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like he was special.
Mm-hmm.
But it did come right after he made a mess, you know, a scene about First Amendment free speech rights. And now people can't aggregate public information into a tweet thread. What?
Someone even brought up a tweet that Elon made it back in April, when these conversations first started bubbling up about him acquiring Twitter, where he mentioned that, like, yes, I'm such a proponent for free speech that even my critics will still have a platform.
Sure, Jan.
And so it's like, save your hot takes and kind of just keep retweeting that. It's becoming increasingly difficult to stay on Twitter. And what I hate about all of this is that I've commented on Elon Musk, but I'm just a little Char Jossel, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the language is passive aggressive. I'm verified on Twitter, and now it's, instead of saying, like, this person is a notable news source, it's like, this person may or may not be notable, because they're really trying to get me to spend that $8 subscribe to Twitter Blue. But I hate that Twitter is one of those social media platforms that I have to depend on for work. I've gotten so, Twitter has been a gift for me, but also a curse, because hello, the critics, and I've gotten threats and things on Twitter. But it just kind of sucks to see how the direction that this is going, and knowing that at this rate, I don't know if I'll still be on Twitter within the coming months. I might be gone by March at the latest. It's becoming increasingly gross, and there's no regulation on the trending topics. It's a hellscape. It really is.
It really is. And I feel like if there were an obvious platform to jump to, it would already be dead.
Yeah.
Speaking of, one of the accounts that's been suspended is the account of a competing platform called Mastodon. Do you know about Mastodon?
I've heard about Mastodon, but I heard that's a hot mess too.
It's not ideal. For all kinds of reasons, but it's one of the places people are going, and somehow they became worthy of a suspension on Twitter. What?
Yeah.
What? So what is it? You got to pick a lane. Is it free speech and everybody gets to say whatever they want and you can tweet about internal deliberations about Hunter Biden and his penis can get out there in the world? Or you're going to suspend everybody.
Yeah.
Play by the same rules you give everybody else. If it's rules for me and not for thee, that's hypocrisy.
But see, that's the emotional abuse that comes at the hands of Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it reminds me of the tweet he sent out before the midterm saying, listen, I'm not telling you who to vote for, but Republicans would get the job done. So
yes,
you are telling us who to yeah, vote for. So it's one of those things that it just, like I said, is becoming increasingly worse, and he has to answer for this. But he also, what I thought was hilarious is yesterday he ran a poll. And he asked his followers, I don't know if you saw this.
Yeah, I heard about it.
He asked his followers, he said, when should he bring these people back? So
uh-huh,
I guess it's a temporary suspension. He said one of the options was right now. I think another one was like after 7 days, after a month. Like he had these options. So a majority of Elon's followers, or I should say a majority of the people who participated in this poll, said right now,
mm-hmm,
you know, reinstate their accounts right now. Do you know that instead of doing that, he then followed up that tweet with saying, too many options, I'll try again later.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
It's so wild to see this display of toddler-like behavior, mm-hmm, and these tantrums coming at the hands of the world's richest man.
Yes.
And him just kind of just stomping around fee-fi-fo-fum style all over Twitter.
I mean, I'm reluctant to use terms that are used in a clinical setting to describe someone casually.
Uh-huh.
He's a narcissist.
Oh, gosh, a raging one.
Raging narcissist.
Raging one. I don't think anyone would challenge or deny that.
I mean, he has this cognitive dissonance where he rapidly, in real time, changes what the world is based on what he's seeing in it in order to cater to what he needs it to be. He changes the rules of the road whenever it's convenient, and he believes it.
Changes the rules, and I think also serves as a huge distraction. You
yeah,
know, you want to get on your platform and randomly attack trans people and say your pronouns are prosecuting Fauci, and there's so much going on, even within Tesla, and even with, you know, him allegedly testing on animals and all this stuff, but it's like the main distraction is, of course, to keep using trans people as a political hockey puck.
Just wait until all the queer people walk.
Ooh. You know, it was just 2 days ago that the world was rocked by the sudden loss of Stephen Twitch Boss, who we know as Ellen's DJ.
Yeah.
He was also on So You Think You Can Dance. And I believe his wife was on Dancing with the Stars as a dancer.
Yeah, I think
you
know.
Right. And it was wild. You know, TMZ's most recent report is that he did leave a note. We don't know what's in the note. But it references his past struggles. We don't know. It's an ambiguous reference. And so investigators have determined that he took an Uber from his home to the motel, and which was less than a mile away from his home. And he switched his phone to airplane mode so that no one could reach or track him. So it's been very, very jarring and sad news. I know that I have friends. One of my personal friends is Kaylin Allen, who was always featured on The Ellen DeGeneres Show. And then one of my friends, Trey, was a producer on The Ellen DeGeneres Show. So this has hit specifically close to home personally for me. I did not know Twitch personally, but It's yet again another reminder. There's a lot of conversation going on right now about mental health and how things are not always as they seem. Because
yeah,
all we saw of Twitch was him in front of the camera and dancing and TikToks with his wife and mm-hmm, having fun. We only know Twitch in a fun space.
Yeah.
That's the only emotion we ever saw was jovial, fun, dancing. And so a lot of people are still in mourning. Most recently, First Lady, former First Lady, forever First Lady, Michelle Obama, my girl.
Yes.
She offered her condolences. Of course, Ellen posted a touching tribute alongside a very beautiful video. I don't know if you got a chance to take a look at it. Ellen posted a video because towards the end of her show, like the series finale, if you will, she was giving her flowers to her staff, so to speak. And she surprised Twitch with a segment where she called him down off the podium and played a highlight reel of their favorite memories. And it broke my heart watching because Twitch's mom was in the audience.
Aww.
And I believe his best friend was in the audience. I should mention that he leaves behind his wife and 3 children. And so there's a lot of people, in, like I said, in mourning and currently grappling with this. JoJo Siwa posted to Instagram and said, "My heart is beyond broken." Twitch was a best friend and a mentor, not just to me, but to so many. I'll never forget our time at work together on So You Think You Can Dance. He became such a light in my life.
It hits hard, I think, anytime we lose somebody, especially when it's somebody that people so easily think of as just, you know, so happy, so, you know, on top of the world.
Yeah.
You never know what someone's dealing with. And I think this is why I wish we would all be more authentic and vulnerable mm-hmm. with each other. You know, it's easy to want to live a life of, you know, no hard feelings with your friends. But, yeah. I mean, you know, all it takes is one day when someone who has had ideation follows through.
Yeah.
That's all it takes is once.
And to know that you got that low.
Yeah.
You know, life is very hard. I wish, in matter of fact, in preparation for the segment, I should have pulled a clip of Tabitha Brown. She made such a touching video about referencing like that inner child, that place of joy. Not everyone had joyous childhoods, but yeah. there were typically moments of joy in people's childhood. And when you become an adult and you become of the world, how hard the world is, and when you feel low, kind of try to return to that happy place. And I know that I'm kind of like truncating it for repeating
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But if you get a chance, head on over to Tabitha Brown's Instagram because it's really, really touching.
And I just want to say, you know, if you're struggling, ask for help. And we're going to talk, I think, in a segment here in a little bit about what you can do to get help. But get help. You are not in this alone.
We are. And you can also call or text 988 or chat at 988lifeline.org. And as Ryan just mentioned, stick around because coming up next hour, we will be talking mental health with an actual specialist. And that'll be good. And particularly how it affects men and how men go about, you know, seeking life-saving remedies and alternatives to that deep down depression.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good Morning Beat, Channel Q.
Good morning and welcome to The Morning Beat. I'm Shar Jossel, filling in for Michaela Gordon.
And I'm Ryan Bash. I'm filling in for, I don't know, whoever that guy is, whatever his name is. AJ Gibson.
It's so fun. I'm so excited because, you know, we're here on the West Coast and we have entered, if you all have been listening to this show long enough or are familiar with me for long enough, then you know that 7 a.m. is my favorite hour
of
the day.
I don't get it.
It is just the best.
Really?
Oh my gosh. Like now I feel like my day has started. If you can't tell, I am smiling from ear to ear.
Yes.
I just love 7 a.m.
You do glow at 7 a.m.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, I'm like, is my light even on? You know?
I love it. I love it. This is the best hour of the day. So, Ryan, I'm very excited because this upcoming hour, we will be talking to Chase Anderson, who is a queer Black psychiatrist at the University of California in San Francisco, about how you can support men who suffer in silence, which I think is so important, especially given the last segment where we talked about Twitch.
Yes.
Twitch boss from the Ellen DeGeneres show and from So You Think You Can Dance and his tragic suicide. He died by suicide earlier this week. And also, we're going to be hitting on some points. Ryan and I will be sharing our own as well. But we'll be kind of continuing the conversation about the most profound change that people are making to drastically improve their mental health state. And we both kind of mentioned that we're not here to trivialize it. It's not like a step one, step two, step three, boom, you're healed. But if we can make a fun segment and have some well-rounded conversation as to what Ryan might do, what I might do, and also what other people might do to kind of help in rough patches, especially for LGBTQ plus people. We know sometimes the holidays can be a little rocky.
Yes.
Sometimes people are spending the holidays alone. Mm-hmm. So these tips will certainly be helpful. I'm so excited to dive into this hour.
It's going to be a good hour.
It's going to be a good hour. So excited. So Ryan, what's the news on the beat?
Well, this is so topical. The Biden administration has pushed funding for LGBTQ mental health services. The Health and Human Services Department issued nearly $110 million in federal funding for a nonprofit called Vibrant Emotional Health. So this money is meant for the nonprofit's 988 hotline that focuses on suicide prevention in marginalized groups, including LGBTQ communities. So in 2022, the Trevor Project released a study stating that 45% of LGBTQ youth seriously considered suicide, while 14% actually attempted it.
Mm.
Staggering
statistic.
It is. 43% of people surveyed also shared a fear of not being taken seriously, which those two things feel like they go hand in hand to me.
You know, I often think about like how the youth today, we dealt with bullies that were peers, and the youth today are dealing with bullies that are peers, but also like local politicians, mm-hmm. maybe your principal. Like the bullies are coming from everywhere, so my heart really goes out to people like in middle school right now, like the roughest patch of school, which is middle school typically.
I often say I would never go back to middle school, but I really wouldn't go back to middle school now.
No, never.
And more positive news, another historic New York City gay bar, the site of a 1960s queer protest, has been officially deemed a historic landmark.
Oh!
Julius's Bar in NYC, the country's oldest gay bar and location of an iconic queer rights protest in 1966, is now legally cemented as a landmark. For years, New York City bars were, and I didn't know it was this specific, New York City bars were not only encouraged, but legally required to turn away explicitly gay patrons as, quote, disorderly under New York State Liquor Authority rule.
I wonder what deemed someone explicitly gay.
Isn't
air
that,
quote.
Yeah, so it's like subjective, I guess.
So I guess you gotta be discreet. You can be gay, but be very discreet in presentation and behavior.
I guess so, and if they're monitoring the bars, like, enforcement of the policy.
Yeah.
Probably some cis white man.
Of course.
You know, evaluating.
Of course.
So anyway, they inspired by a black civil rights sit-in movement in 1960, which was a big thing in the South and elsewhere in the country. Three members of the gay rights group Machine Society did something similar. They took several spots around the city and did sip-in instead of sit-in protests. Moving on, this is also really good news. GLAAD has reported that one in five studio films included an LGBTQ character in 2021. So that's also good news.
Yes.
Greater representation, movies like Dear Evan Hansen, of course, but others that you wouldn't necessarily expect. So I'm going to post this story later because I really think I'm going to take a deep dive in it, and I hope you do too. We want to support the studios that support our community. Moving on to the weather, I feel like lucky to be in LA today. It's 49 in DC, 30 in your hometown of Chicago.
All right.
But I wish I were in Miami because there it's a balmy 80 degrees today. It's going to be 43 in Seattle, 67 in LA, and 65 in Cathedral City. Now, Char, what's the vibe of the day?
The vibe of the day is brought to you by Lesbian Black Feminist.
Yes.
One of my favorite authors, Audre Lorde. Audre says, and this is just on par for the day, it's not our differences that divide us. It is our inability to recognize, accept, and celebrate those differences. And I couldn't agree more. We've been having conversations about men and mental health. We've talked about Twitch from The Ellen Show. And we're continuing that conversation because across the globe, listen, it doesn't discriminate among many races, ethnicities, income brackets. Men often avoid seeking help for psychological issues. And here to help us flesh more of this out and break more of it down is Chase Anderson, who's a queer Black psychiatrist at the University of California in San Francisco. Hi, Chase.
Hi, it's very nice to be with all of you.
Yes, welcome to the show. So happy that you're able to join us so bright and early this morning. So Chase, I have to know, what is it about, because you know, we see these discussions happening online, we kind of see attitudes towards mental health shifting, but what is it about men and their approach to mental health that is still keeps a barrier up where they're less, I guess, susceptible or less prone to seek help?
Yeah, I think there's many multiple factors. I think one of the big ones that we don't talk about enough is how society makes men feel like it's wrong to have emotions or it's wrong to emote in a way that's sorrowful. Anger is often like, oh, it's praised. It's said like, oh, it's okay to be angry. I'm glad you're showing such passion. But when a man is sad, I think people are like, oh, why are you doing that? So I think that societal conversation really needs to happen, and individual conversations about it is okay to show these deeper, darker emotions of what's actually going on inside of you.
Isn't there also an access barrier too? I saw an executive from a health insurance provider on LinkedIn post the other day, like, people shouldn't have barriers to mental health. And I had to laugh because I had a mental health crisis not that long ago, and it took forever to figure out how to get treatment. So like, is our society doing anything about that?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people are drawing attention to that now. I really am glad you're bringing that point up. One of the things is I work with children and adolescents, and some of them have been on wait lists for a year just
wow.
to see a psychiatrist. So just thinking about like not only getting your foot in the door, but then like once you're in the door, especially for minoritized people, like how did you get to that door? How did you get through the door? Then you have to like figure out, oh, I'm minoritized. Like, will this white provider possibly, or like this provider in general, understand like the things I'm going through in terms of racism, in terms of minority stress? So I think what's changing, which is great, is there are more minoritized mental health providers too, but it's taking time, and that's something we really need to be focusing on too.
Yeah,
so I'm really glad.
No, go ahead.
Oh, no, that was it.
I was just saying that I know that that's something that I've personally faced as well, especially, you know, in therapy, because there are multiple layers. I have intersectional identities, and some people mm-hmm. just don't understand the nuances of that. Now, I want to talk specifically about this report that I'm reading from Mental Health America, which has gone on record to say that mental health professionals diagnose depression more often in women than men. However, according to the Center of Disease Control and Prevention, men make up nearly 80% of deaths by suicide in comparison to the general, you know, overall population with women included. Men die by suicide 4 times more often than women do. Can you speak to that and maybe why that is? Is that because women seek help more often? Like, what factors into that?
Yeah, it's a multitude of factors, and I really appreciate you bringing that to the fore. So one of the things that we think about is that men have more lethal attempts usually. So men will use things like guns, or they will use more lethal like weapons towards themselves in those suicide attempts. The other thing that happens is that even if like men and women get to the like psychiatrist, sometimes men are misdiagnosed, and especially minoritized men. Back in the day, there was an overdiagnosis of schizophrenia. So seeing and hearing things that aren't there inside of like for Black people, but those diagnoses were incorrect. A lot of them were experiencing like racial discrimination, which led to them being very justifiably paranoid. So what we need to think about in terms of just like mental health is that men are more predisposed to like have those, we call them internalizing disorders. So they are likely to have like depression, anxiety, things that you can't always see. And so it's up to the psychiatrist and like other community members to ask about like, what is really going on inside of you? What is really happening to you? It is okay to like, let us know that you're sad. It is okay to ask people if they're feeling suicidal. Asking about suicidality and things like that, especially like for men and just people in general, it doesn't give somebody suicidality if it's not there,
right.
But it can help save their life.
Right.
Yeah. It's so interesting you say that, because you know, we were talking about Twitch dying by suicide earlier this week, and
mm-hmm.
a few hours
yeah.
before that, he posted what seemed like a really joyous video, I think, on TikTok. So
yeah.
how do those of us who care about men, or I guess anyone else who might be struggling, how do we identify that there might be something that needs addressing in somebody who might seem so joyous?
Yeah, I think to take a step back, one of the things is we need to have better conversations as a society. I think one of the things I always think about is when I interact with friends, and I've lived with my own mental health things as well, and like I have depression in remission. But one of the best and most powerful things was when a friend would say, "How are you?" And I would say, like, "I'm good," because that's the standard answer we're taught to give. Sometimes my friends would be like, "How are you actually?" So I actually have adopted that for when I work with kids and adolescents. When they come into appointments, they're like, "I'm good." And you're like, "You're here for a reason. So, like, how are you actually?" And it just, that second ask creates a different set of circumstances and shows the person, like, I'm actually invested in how you are. One of the other things is, like, a lot of people, especially minoritized people, are taught to subvert their own emotions and present a face to the world. And so what spaces are we creating for them to let down that face a little bit? And who's actually checking on them? Like, what friends are checking in? What, like, aspects of society are checking in? What spaces do those people have who are, like, living with mental illness to actually, like, be themselves and say, like, "I'm struggling, I'm having trouble"? There are, like, mental health crisis lines and things like that, but I think the conversations need to happen at a societal level as well as, like, individual of, like, let's check in with each other a little bit more, especially for, like, African-American men who are dying by suicide in higher rates as time goes on, especially youth. So how do we start that conversation at home about, like, it is okay to tell me if you're struggling?
It's one of those things that bleeds into the larger conversation. I know as it pertains to Black people and it comes to medical racism and this idea that Black people inherently have a higher threshold for pain. We see this show up with the Black maternal mortality rate with Black women and Black birthing people who go to the hospital to give birth and the cesareans. Like, so this conversation all loops in. I also really want to quickly add in, which you've kind of spoken to, but gay and bisexual and other men who have sex with men are at an even greater risk for suicide attempts, especially before the age of 25. So that is, it's quite jarring. But, you know, Chase, I want to thank you so much for being able to join us for the show and for this segment today. And thank you for all of the information that you offered up. It's so helpful.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, that's Chase Anderson, a queer Black psychiatrist at the University of California in San Francisco. And before we hop out of here, I want to let you all know, if you or someone is affected by any of the issues raised in this story, call or text the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. Stick around. We got more show for you. Welcome back to The Morning Beat. If you're just now tuning in, I'm Shar Jassel, filling in for Michaela Gordon. And Ryan Basham is here, filling in for A.J. Gibson.
Good riddance, A.J. Just kidding. I love you.
It's so good. And if you're just tuning in, we're having what I like to call a mental health hour. And
I love that.
You know, this next conversation we're about to have, Ryan, is about, it's particularly, it made me think of, like, LGBTQ plus people as we head into the holidays, because not everyone, you know, is going home or what they would deem home. People still, you know, a lot of the conversation is like, oh, spend time with your chosen family. But there, it takes time to kind of form a chosen family, too.
Absolutely.
You know, people kind of omit that from the conversation. And so I thought that this was interesting. And I do want to mention, which we mentioned at the top of the hour, that our conversation is in no way to trivialize or to replace seeking a medical professional. Mental health illnesses are specific to each individual person. We're just here to share our experiences and some things we found down to the Reddit thread.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Ryan, when you are going through a tough time, and I know this is a general question, but when you're going through a tough time, what are some of your go-tos? And I ask you this because we've talked about therapy and things, and I know that therapy is designed for us to get the tools, but the work comes in when you have to implement the tools.
Yeah.
So what are some of your, like, go-tos when you're going through, and I'm using an umbrella term, but a rough patch?
You know, one of the things that a therapist told me once that really changed things for me is really simple. Even a nap can be a reset. Like, going to sleep for a little bit, just, you know, and that's true for any part of your life.
Yeah.
You know, but I find that just taking a little bit to be away from other people, just to close my eyes, and even if it's not an easy thing to do, take a nap, at least to rest.
Yeah.
And sometimes rest for me isn't a nap, it's like I'll put on, I'm a Star Trek nerd, so I'll put on something that's comforting for me,
okay,
that distracts me from how I'm thinking and feeling as well.
Yeah.
So either an actual nap or a rest period with something that engages me in a way that isn't taxing and draws focus away. What about you, though?
So I'm not really a nap girl. I just recently got into naps, like this year at 34.
Wow.
And because I'm so damn nosy. Oh, my God. Nothing worse than taking a nap and waking up and it seems like 20 million news hits have come in. That's just the way my mind has always worked. And actually, as you were speaking, one of my friends, Ryan Sides, I have a lot of Ryans in my life.
Well, we're incredible,
of course. My friends, Ryan Sides, it texted me earlier this week and recommended this documentary titled Stutz. It's on Netflix. And it's Jonah Hill and his therapist. And at first I was like, I am not watching no damn Jonah Hill in therapy.
Yeah.
When I tell you, one of the best documentaries I've seen all year.
Really?
I did every exercise. I took every note. His therapist was amazing. It was so helpful to me. But for me, I know that I find solace in food.
Yes.
Now, that could be a hit or miss, but sometimes, you know, my mind goes to, you know, these nachos will not disappoint me in the ways in which this person has. You know, I also have recently, within the past 2 years, found that exercising. I was never that girl with, you know, the LA and all of that. But I enjoy putting on a podcast, which is so weird. I wonder what that says about my personality. Instead of music, I don't really listen to music when I exercise. I listen to podcasts.
Interesting.
It's so weird.
That is weird.
And then if I listen to music, it's got to be like some gutta hip hop. Like,
I
want to hear Megan Thee Stallion, Lotto. I need to hear it all. Cardi. I want to hear it all. And so those are some things that sort of helped me. And I should also mention, everyone knows I am just a crazy woman when it comes to journaling. And I'm putting an asterisk by crazy. Because journaling is that's my space when I think to myself, well, who can I run to? It's 2 a.m. I'm up and I am upset or disturbed about something. There's no one I can call, really. Like a lot of my family, my sisters live in New York, so that's East Coast time. They're 3 hours ahead of me. My mother and father are in Chicago. That's Central time. That's 2 hours. Like if it's 2 a.m., then that means it's, what, 5 a.m. in New York and then 4 a.m. in Chicago. And then when I think about people in L.A., it's like, okay, people got to work. They have their own lives. And so journaling has really been my saving grace in a lot of my L.A. experience.
Writing things down can be so cathartic, because when something's in your head, it can get bigger and smaller based on how you feel.
Yes.
But if you write it down, it's on the page. It's in the physical world. It's out of your head and onto the paper.
Yes.
That's
huge. And I love that, especially like I just had a breakthrough this week. I'll tell you about it off air. Nevertheless, one of the tips that I saw from the Reddit thread was learn to disengage, because there's a lot of garbage out there, especially in the form of social media, people's opinions. Be willing to say, okay, I'm done with this conversation. And
yes,
I totally agree with that, because I found myself sometimes going down anti-trans rabbit holes. You see a story and it's like, I can't believe this person thinks this way. And then before you know it, I'm reading this tweet and this tweet and this tweet. And that stuff is so insidious that it affects sometimes the way in which I might view myself. And I don't like that. I should say it challenges it, because I know who I am.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But it challenges it in unhealthy ways.
That happens to me when I watch cable news, which I'm addicted to because I'm a politics person.
Oh, yeah,
you are. But like, I get really hung up on my concern for the future of the human race and my concern for the future of this country. And I can care about those things and not be engaged in it right now if that's not healthy for me.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I was the same with, like, 2020, I had to pull back from everything between Trump and George Floyd and everything that was going on. Like, I love Joanne Reed, but I had to stop watching her show because it was not healthy for me.
Yeah, you got to take breaks. It's okay.
I don't even see how people work in that type of environment.
I don't either.
I tip my hat to them.
Yes. I mean, also, I would love a show on MSNBC, so call me. But
someone also, a tip was to get a dog, which I have heard that getting a pet, I'll say getting a pet. I have heard, you know, getting a pet is good for the mental health. I know even playing with some of my friends' pets, because I don't own a pet. But I love playing with my friends' pets. One of my friends used to own a Great Dane. He was huge. I knew him since he was a puppy, and he brought me so much joy because he was so silly. Like, I like playing with my friends' dogs and things of that nature. So I could kind of see how that could help.
Yeah, like, there are studies that show that having a pet adds, like, 3 to 5 years to your life expectancy or something.
Really?
Yes, but here's the thing, though. You shouldn't adopt a pet when you're in a crisis place. Be prepared for the responsibilities of, like, ramping up that relationship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I've known people in L.A. who have adopted pets in crisis and then gave them away. which yep. I don't like.
Yep.
I'll leave with this tip before we get up out of here is to never take myself too seriously, which is so hard for me because I take everything seriously and everything personally.
Yes, same.
And it's for me, what I will say, what I'll leave you all with is challenge yourself to shift perspective. There is always a way to shift perspective, even in the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
Challenge yourself to shift perspective, and that is certainly helpful. Well, Ryan, I know that while you were probably getting some much-needed rest last night, I was up watching Harry and Meghan.
Look, sleep first, okay? But Harry and Meghan close second.
I got to tell you, they kept me up past my bedtime.
Did they?
Oh my gosh, I was like running in studio this morning because they kept me up past my bedtime. But I could not turn off the Netflix.
Really? Did you finish it?
I did. I finished it and I just sat back. And I guess I'll ask you this. Can you believe that Archie... Imagine your grandmother being Queen Elizabeth II.
Uh-huh.
And your godfather being Tyler Perry.
Always.
What type of universe is that?
Wild, right?
But it actually happened. Tyler Perry is featured heavily in part two. Well, I should mention, no, this is like part four, part five of the documentary. And it really showed the role that he played in Harry and Meghan's life. I want to play a clip for you before I tell you the tea.
Okay.
That's where Tyler came into the picture. I'd never met him before. He sent me a letter before the wedding just saying he was praying for me. And that if I ever need anything, he would be there. So we stayed in touch. And then when all this happened, we needed to go. He said, what can we do to make it easier? How can I help you?
So I should mention that also Beyonce makes a brief cameo in this documentary. You don't see her, but...
Oh, the text.
Yes. Meghan's like, Beyonce just texted. And Harry like gasps. Maybe you should call her. And he's like, no. So she reads the text out loud. Serena Williams in it. It's a great documentary. I encourage everyone. And listen, I'm not a royal watcher. I'm not that invested in those people across the pond and all their colonialism and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it is such a well-done documentary.
Is it?
I loved it. I loved it. Five stars.
I'll watch a documentary about amoebas if it's well done.
Yeah, it's really good. And so what I love about this is it really highlights just how good of a man Tyler Perry is. I know people have mixed opinions about him, especially in the black community. There's a lot of, you know, conversation around Madea and the church and all of that. But Tyler Perry literally just did like a blind call, if you will, and just reached out to Meghan when she was in the depths of despair. Before we even knew a lot of the stuff, he just saw how the British press was treating her, and he literally created a safe haven for these people because they moved. Remember, they divorced from the royal family, and Harry and Meghan moved stateside literally right before the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
So they had nowhere to live. They were being tracked by the British media, and Tyler Perry put them up in his Los Angeles mansion in the hills and gave them safe haven. And at first, Meghan was like, we're only going to be here for a week. And he's like, girl, shut up. Take as much time as you want. Because, you know, he's got the compound down in Atlanta
as well.
He's fine. He's good.
He's got a bed to sleep in.
And they walk you through like the Oprah interview and how that happened. And now they don't get into the weeds of some of the racial comments that were made. They still lightly talk about it, but Harry says he will never reveal the fullness of that story. There's still a lot of pain there.
Wow.
But there's references to Diana, and we see clips and like the parallels between Meghan and Diana. It's so, so well done. And like I said, it really highlights. I think about how Tyler showed up for Oprah, how Tyler showed up for Janet Jackson. And I honestly, for a lot of black Hollywood who was out of work, they weren't finding jobs. And through Tyler Perry's work and his movies, they got jobs and became culturally relevant again.
Yeah.
I do also want to mention, you know, Tyler Perry did give Kim Kardashian a role in a major motion picture. She was in the I can't remember, it was called like Obsession or Redemption. It starred Brandy. She was in a movie with Brandy, ironically, who's Ray J's sister, for those of you who can't keep up. And so...
There's a weird triangle
and
here.
So, yeah, but it's like Tyler was always giving people chances. And I think that for me, at least as a viewer, this example with Harry and Meghan and how this all unfolded really speaks to the content of his character, no matter how you think about his art or Madea running around and all of that. And so it's a really good documentary. I am recommending it to you all for your weekend watching. It's really good. It's really good.
You just got me. I can't believe it.
I am American.
American. It's a great week for America, I think, because as you probably know by now, the Respect for Marriage Act was signed into law by President Biden this week. But in an op-ed for the Washington Blade, our next guest says that the fight is far from over. Joining us now is Brian Feminella, an LGBTQ advocate, tech entrepreneur, and U.S. Army officer. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and to talk a lot about how, you know, even with the Respect for Marriage Act now being signed into law, there's a lot more to do.
Well, yeah, actually, let's start there. Can you share with us a little bit more about what you have your eyes on that we still need to do?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I've been focusing on is especially how we've been seeing an additional 300 LGBTQ anti-supporting the queer community across the nation in the last year alone.
Yeah, it's kind of insane to me that, you know, just I think in October, some Republicans introduced a federal Don't Say Gay bill in Congress. So there's so much going on. So, what I want to ask you is, can you just dive into a little bit more detail what you see there?
Yeah. So when I first started to look at like the overall queer and trans landscape, the first thing I did was look at how much anti-LGBTQ legislation there were, how we've had 32 this year alone. Acts of violence against the trans community, and especially this entire idea that, like, although there's bipartisan efforts to support equality in the first place, it feels like time and time again we have to give a lot of our owned and kind of what we should have rights already away in order to just get some progress. So although the Respect for Marriage Act is a huge win, it's not the end. And the reason why I say that is because not only do we have the Supreme Court directly, a few justices have already made public statements that directly go against Orgenthal versus Hodges, which we all know is what codifies same-sex marriage as the land of the law. And, you know, one of the big things for me was that now we're seeing older politicians talking about how Gen Z and young people are woke and they're brainwashed. Merely because they're afraid of these changes, like the Respect for Marriage Act, that are long overdue.
Yeah, I always push back personally, and I ask people, well, define woke. That's what trips them up. Mm-hmm. Define woke, you know? I'm interested in knowing, you know, given that we have the majority of our Supreme Court being, you know, conservative-leaning, even though politics isn't necessarily supposed to be brought into that space, what is this tug of war going to look like moving forward? And I ask that because the midterms of last month, Gen Z voters used their voices both on social media and in the voting booths. And a lot of Gen Z is for the progress of LGBTQ plus people. But there's a lot of, you know, boomers, so to speak, mm-hmm. you know, that are not necessarily for that. And even some of my peers. So what is this political tug of war going to look like with progress and fundamental human rights as we move forward?
I think this is a great question. I think one of the biggest things is Gen Z has to continue to make those that aren't accepting uncomfortable. And what I mean by that is continuing to stay loud, always be present, always be in the moment, and always be there when there are anti-LGBTQ discrimination, standing at our local government official offices across the nation, being loud on social media, on Twitter, on TikTok, challenging and questioning the status quo of discrimination. That is how Gen Z continues to turn the ideologies. One thing I always share is that if we're able to just educate and teach people exactly what we need to do, in order then we can already educate folks to sometimes change their mindset. And those that don't want to, we have to stay loud. And by staying loud, it's using our educated and informed Gen Z individuals, which are actually the most educated generation according to research, to be able to continue to question when things are being pushed through on a government level, federal, local, and state, that already are questioning just the mere existence of the queer and trans community.
You know, I hear the fire in your voice, and I'd like to think you're firing up some of our listeners right now. If somebody wants to take action, what's one thing they could do today?
One, register to vote. Even though the midterms are over, 2024 may seem far away, but it's not. And the second thing is, don't be afraid when people tell you that you're less than because of who you are, because in that sense, they just want to silence the voices and the changes and the progress that they know is inevitable. They're just trying to delay that.
moving forward in politics, I'm so fascinated, especially as you mentioned, with the upcoming presidential election. And I say upcoming because it seems like it's so far away, but if you're on edge like me, it seems like it's tomorrow.
Yes.
What can we see? What are some of your projections as we enter, you know, the 2024 presidential race? Because we know a lot of LGBT things will be on the ballot, specifically like trans-related things, because that seems to be the political hockey puck of the moment. So do you have any projections or predictions as to what we might be able to expect?
Yeah, I think we can expect a large majority of Gen Z, even bigger than we saw in the midterm elections, especially since we just saw in the midterms, which are typically the lowest voting population, we saw Gen Z voters increase by 80%. So I can't imagine that in 2024, we're going to see an even bigger of a youth voting wave, and we're going to continue to see people talking about this. Before, politics was a quiet, silent thing. But now that there's so much, I would say, partisan, even on human rights issues, which there shouldn't be, now we're going to see so many more people putting their voices and opinions in the ring. And sometimes that's a good thing. And sometimes, unfortunately, that's a bad thing. But hey, it's free speech, and we have to learn to mitigate, and we have to learn to get ahead of it. So even though 2024 is 2 years away, it's coming fast.
As we say in the South, from your lips to God's ears. Thank you so much, Brian Feminella. I wish we had more time, but we'll have you back. LGBTQ advocate, tech entrepreneur, and U.S. Army officer, thank you for your service, not just in the military, but to our society.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate you all having me. And always remember to vote and keep
And, you know, there's been a lot of conversation, you know, as the holidays are here, people are gathering around tables, reuniting with family. And I'd venture to say sometimes Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's, Kwanzaa, whatever else you celebrate during this blistery winter December.
Festivus.
Yes. It's one of those things where you come together, maybe sometimes even more than you would on Thanksgiving, which means a lot of times people might be met with family that might misgender them or be homophobic or transphobic in various ways. Well, there's a new op-ed that was released titled "The Best Way to Respond When Someone Tells You That Homosexuality Is a Sin." Now, before we dive into this, I'm interested in knowing, do you have any like go-tos? And I'm asking you this because I feel like we all are kind of met with this in some regard or another, whether you're getting it in person from a family member, whether you're getting it online in a tweet. In what ways do you respond to it, or do you just ignore these types of criticisms?
It depends on who said it. It depends on the context. But there are two things I usually say, one of which is, I'm sure you mean that in the best possible way, but you're very wrong.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But sometimes I'll also say, you seem to not understand that saying something like that is deeply hurtful, painful, and bigoted on your part. So you need to realize that just because you believe it's true doesn't mean everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
And you saying so is not godly. It's not graceful. It's not loving. It's not kind.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't always like that, but it's true.
I totally agree. And I also, you know, would push back and say a lot of the time, say, no, it's not loving. I typically do not respond. I typically ignore it. I've done so much self-work into, like, fundamentally knowing who I am. And that's not to say others don't, but I don't give that stuff gas. And if I do choose to give it gas, I have just like this arsenal of like biblical texts and scriptures to also, if you tell me I'm an abomination, I got
lists
about
yeah.
you eating shellfish or animal with a hood fit for feet or mixing fabrics. You're in polyester and cotton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they also say that's an abomination. Like I rebut with that because, you know, you can't cherry pick to play oppression Olympics with me. Get off my back. Leave me alone. So one of the responses that I saw through this Reddit thread is someone responds and says, then don't be homosexual. It's your religion, not mine. Which also makes me think of what Whoopi Goldberg has famously always said for years on The View. If you don't agree with gay marriage, then don't get gay married.
That's all.
If you don't agree with abortion, then don't have an abortion. But you don't have the right to impose your beliefs onto me, especially if I'm not a part of that specific belief system or congregation or church. You don't have that right.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's some other ones. They say, tell them religion is unnatural. It's not found in nature, while homosexuality is found in nature and rampant, which I think is interesting because then that goes into how we all have our vices. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a new argument that's come up. Like some people, you know, drink, some people smoke, some people go to church, which is controversial to say, but it is a way of coping.
100%. You know, something that I've said before, too, is like, I am so sorry that your spirituality includes judging other people.
Yeah.
And I hope that you find some healing from that.
Yeah.
And I mean it. Like, it's also
You're
meant
so
as
graceful.
Shade. But it's true, though. Like, doesn't that suck that somebody else's spiritual life is centered around judging other people?
Yeah. And
how tragic is that?
And I love how graceful you are with that, because for the most part, I am too. You're not going to rile me up and suck my energy out, you know, in arguing with you. I don't have to argue what I know to be true.
Yeah.
Maybe you do.
Yeah, exactly.
But Char Jocelle doesn't.
Yeah. And the thing I think about too is, like, you don't change hearts and minds by having a competition about who's wrong.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I try to be in a good place about it and leave them something that maybe they'll contemplate later. But sometimes I'm just very mean. Like,
yeah.
You got to catch me in the right generous place to not be a jerk to you.
Yeah. I'm going to read a few more responses before we head out. Someone says, you know, the same book you used to condemn me also says you can stone your wife for disobedience and sell your daughter into slavery. Also, anything unnatural, such as glasses and manufactured medicine, is also a no-no. Don't practice those rules, huh? It's almost like you're choosing what works for you, which
what?
Is, you know, and it's all subjective. That's also been one of my gripes when it comes to certain religious texts, because people go to church homes and go to religious institutions that best suit them.
Yes.
If you are a single mother with a baby daddy, you ain't going to the church where the pastor's in the pulpit condemning single mothers with no husband. You know what I'm saying? So it's like everybody, you can go to one church. You can go to four different churches on one Sunday and have someone preach from the same scripture and get four different interpretations. So
yes.
Everybody's finding what works for them. That's the point I'm trying to make. Someone also mentioned what I just said. Are you wearing multiple types of fabrics, fibers in your clothes? And then the last one I'll read. Someone said, like quoting scripture, they say, I always tell them it says straight to hell, not gay to hell. So I guess you're the one with a hot destination in your future.
Ah!
It gets them every time. It gets them every time. So it's subjective. And, you know, you all, please, you know, if you feel the need to exert your energy in defending your fundamental humanity, I don't know what types of families or environments people are going to be around, but just be mindful if you know you have that homophobic aunt or that transphobic uncle, because it's only a matter of time before it, like, bubbles up. And if you feel inclined to defend yourself, make sure you come armed.
Because
they never like that.
Yes.
They never like that.
Yeah, but know that you're not obligated to engage.
Yes, you are not obligated. You can disengage, which they also don't like that.
Yeah, yeah, walk away.
Because they're looking to argue.
Mm-hmm.
And they look even sillier if they're trying to rile you up and you're acting like a house cat, not paying them any attention. So, Ryan, what I wanted to talk to you about, this is a true story. This is no pitch for the show. It's something that genuinely bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
The damn Instagram algorithm has really been upsetting me, and not in the way that you probably think I'm going to say.
Okay, because I have lots of thoughts, but...
It has nothing to do with being shadow banned or anything like
really?
That. No. So what it has to do is with the suggested reels that they give me.
Okay.
And what I mean when I say that is I don't necessarily mean like on the explore page. I mean, like, you know, as you're scrolling, sometimes Instagram shows you a reel a row of reels that they're suggesting. Now, most of my Instagram people that I follow are, you know, makeup artists. I love a good makeup trend. Chefs and cooks. I just like watching it. I'm not really in the kitchen like that anymore, because who likes doing the dishes? And then, you know, I it's a lot of politics, news, friends, mutuals. I follow some guys that I find attractive. I got some IG crushes, but the what's referred to me is so hypersexualized. I'm like, who am I following that's giving me, like, oh, men working out with no underwear on in very thin shorts, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, people are, like, simulating, like, sexual activity for, like, punchlines, like, you know, like, when she's mad at her, when her boyfriend makes her mad and I come over and visit. And it's like, I could show you some examples. Or, like, when she's, and I should mention, everything is very, you know, cis-hetero.
Of course.
Like, I'm not getting, like, lesbian, you know, suggestions or gay suggestions or even trans suggestions. It's very, like, you know, making a baby, so to speak. But I'm like, I don't know what this is, and why are hypersexual reels and accounts being suggested to me?
I
when
mean,
there's no indication of that anywhere on my socials.
Are you bookmarking low-key? Are you bookmarking
no.
things? Because what happened to
only
me
thing
is...
I bookmark... I'm so corny. Only thing I bookmark, really, is like, you know, those mental health self-help pages that
yes.
have affirmations. Like, I'm that girl.
Uh-huh.
Or if I find a dress that I like, oh, Chloe's got that shoe. I'm going to revisit that. Or this is a photo shoot inspiration.
Yeah.
And, you know, some IG crushes, I'll, you know, bookmark, but...
So here's my thing. I have two different bookmark set groups. One of them
Ooh.
Is called Fit Inspo. It's hot guys working out.
Ooh.
And the other one is just hot guys. And then I actually have a third one. It's called Husband Material. But I bookmark. See, I thought if I stopped following these accounts, it would, well, first of all, people could tell who I was following. That was embarrassing. So I stopped following a just casual bookmark.
Yeah.
But every single suggested post or reel or whatever are these hot guys. And now I have like this social media induced body dysmorphia because all I can see is what I don't have now, both in terms of my romantic and sex life, but also my physical body.
Yeah.
I mean, Instagram is a dangerous place.
The AI did it for me. That Lenza app. They showed me in a sci-fi world. I said, dang, where'd she get that boob to waist ratio?
I mean,
I look like a video vixen.
I haven't done that. Is it worth it?
No, it's not. And they're saying, I mean, you got it. I should mention, it's like $4.99.
Oh, no, the end of the world.
Yeah, but they give you, like, what I do like is everything's been so original. Mm. Like, I haven't seen any, you know, copies. And so I did mine when it was, like, fresh. Like, I was one day in and I felt late on the trend. And the fact that, like, people, I think Harry Connick Jr. just did his yesterday. Someone else just did, because I follow him. Someone else just did theirs. And I'm like, you all, this is old news now. Where were you last week when everybody was filling the Instagram feed with cartoons?
But don't they say that it also like appropriates other artists' work? Because
now,
the
see,
AI does that?
I have heard that. So I feel like I'm out of the weeds because I did mine before all of this bubbled up.
Yeah. I mean, now I'm on the actual national radio saying that I know it's a thing. So now if I do it, I'm a real bad knowing person.
Well, really quickly, before we hop up out of here, here are some tips that we got from Rev Local regarding the Instagram algorithm as to why we might get some of the things that we get. So it's contingent on your relationship with the person posting the content, which makes no sense if we're not following them, but maybe we have lots of mutuals.
Okay.
Maybe 50% of your mutuals are following this person, so they're giving you that, you know, that video. Your past interest and engagement with that type of post.
So Instagram
forgets nothing, I guess.
Oh.
The timing of the post, how often you check and browse Instagram, how many people follow you, and how much time you spend on Instagram per day all factor into what we are shown.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I still want to know the science behind
it. Are 50% of the people you know engaging with really sexual?
You know what? They might be. I just was looking at my statistics, and it was refreshing. Like, I was, you know, looking at, like, my primary audience, and there's, like, 56% of my audience is women, and the rest is men. They don't have it broken down in, like, a non-binary type
way.
Yeah, yeah. But a lot of my platonic friends are gay men. So maybe so. And only God knows what the other girls are looking at.
So many questions.
Yeah. I mean, I have some, you know, cishet guys in my life, but majority of my friends are gay men. So
maybe you should do like an anonymous survey of your friends.
Oh, I know what they're following. I've seen those DMs, child.
Tell me something good.
Alrighty. We are at the end of our show with one of my favorite segments, Tell Me Something Good, that Sherry Shepherd stole for her show, by the way.
How rude.
I'm taking full credit. She took it from this show, The Morning Beat. And I'm so excited because this one story really touched my heart. So the manager of a Minnesota liquor store was surprised to come back from lunch just a few days ago to find his counter help walking around in her socks. Okay. Now let me explain to you this story.
Okay.
So this employee ended up giving her favorite pair of shoes to a man that she saw walking on the street with boxes on her feet.
Oh, wow.
I mean, on his feet, excuse me. So security camera footage revealed that this employee had given, like I said, her shoes, which was a pair of purple retro Jordans. You know
what?
How much that costs? They're retro and they're Jordans. To a man who was experiencing some houselessness. And he had, like I said, strapped boxes to his feet. This was at the Brooklyn Center Liquor Store. And her name is Talia Thomas. And locals call her Ace. Okay, now.
All right, Ace.
And it was a split second of kindness. She said it was an easy decision. He said, no one would ever give me shoes like that. And she said, well, I'm not everybody. So I wonder, these stories like this make me feel good because it reaffirms and kind of reassures that there's still some sort of goodness.
Yes.
Still, even with all of the nonsense going on, like politically and all of the news hits, we just talked about mental health. These feel-good stories still exist. And the fact that Ace, I'm going to call this girl Ace, this woman Ace, like I know her.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she was able to just do this on impulse, I wonder what spoke to her.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then those are her favorite shoes. I think anybody would have contemplated over that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know what trivial thing I wonder?
Yeah.
What did she wear on her way home?
Oh yeah, since she was walking around there in socks.
Yeah.
Maybe can you Postmates shoes? I'm sure you could do Target, send you a size 9 to the liquor store to put
right.
on,
yeah,
you know,
I think
anything.
I may try this sometime.
But to know that's your favorite pair, that's where I would have been
Wild.
Caught up. It's one thing to give away like the little busters that you've had.
Oh yeah.
But your favorite pair? Congratulations. That's good.
She's going to get a sponsorship.
She's going to be blessed immensely, I'm sure.
Yes.
Like, that's got to come back tenfold. And I feel like she did this with no motivation. Like, this was genuinely... And I should mention that her boss is the one that submitted and told this story because they saw on security camera footage. So it's not like she ran to the press with this. It was her boss. So,
aww,
yeah.
What a good boss. Well, I have some good news to share with you. Ryan Murphy is going to receive the Carol Burnett Award at the Golden Globes. I don't know if you know about this. You probably do, Char. So the Carol Burnett Award goes to true legends in television.
Oh.
The first one in 2019 went to Carol Burnett herself. It's also gone to Norman Lear and Ellen DeGeneres. And
okay.
So he's the fourth ever recipient of it, and he'll get it on January 10th. And it's meant to honor someone, quote, based on their body of work and the lasting impact that their television career achievements have had on both the industry and audiences. That feels so right for Ryan Murphy.
It does.
Who else has that much of an impact on culture?
And I do love his programming. He
yes.
has the range, too. He does everything from Glee to American Horror Story. I want him to bring back Feud.
Yes.
I really enjoy it, Feud.
Uh-huh.
But I typically, if I hear Ryan Murphy's behind a project, I'm watching. And you know, I loved Pose. That's my assignment to producer Vanessa. She still hasn't started it. Have you ever watched Pose?
I've watched some of it, not all of it.
Okay, you need to watch all of it.
You're right.
Pose is a fantastic show. And so Ryan is also known for taking risks with new talent and new storylines and humanizing people, really.
Yeah.
And so...
In a nuanced way.
And I cannot wait to see what he does next.
Yes.
Even though I really wasn't a fan of The Politician.
Oh, really?
No, I wasn't a fan of that
well.
One. And what's the movie he had with...
Love, Simon? No.
No,
that
no,
wasn't
no.
That wasn't him.
Remember he had like the gay movie on Netflix...
Oh, yeah.
It
with
was like,
all the...
With Jeremy Pope.
Yes.
Yeah, and Jim Parsons.
Yes.
That was hit or miss for me.
It was
yeah.
fine.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining us today. It's been quite the ride. It's always fun working with you, Basham.
Likewise. Let's do this more.
We need to.
Yes.
Y'all hear that? We need to. You all have a great weekend. AJ and Michaela will be back bright and early Monday morning. And have a safe and happy holiday from me and Ryan to you.
Bye-bye.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I am American.
It's a great week for America, I think, because as you probably know by now, the Respect for Marriage Act was signed into law by President Biden this week. But in an op-ed for the Washington Blade, our next guest says that the fight is far from over. Joining us now is Brian Feminella, an LGBTQ advocate, tech entrepreneur, and U.S. Army officer. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and to talk a lot about how, you know, even with the Respect for Marriage Act now being signed into law, there's a lot more to do.
Well, yeah, actually, let's start there. Can you share with us a little bit more about what you have your eyes on that we still need to do?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I've been focusing on is especially how we've been seeing an additional 300 LGBTQ anti-supporting the queer community across the nation in the last year alone.
Yeah, it's kind of insane to me that, I think in October, some Republicans introduced a federal Don't Say Gay bill in Congress. So there's so much going on. So, what I want to ask you is, can you just dive into a little bit more detail what you see there?
Yeah, so when I first started to look at, like, the overall queer and trans landscape, the first thing I did was look at how much anti-LGBTQ legislation there were, how we've had 32 this year alone acts of violence against the trans community, and especially this entire idea that, like, although there's bipartisan efforts to support equality in the first place, it feels like time and time again we have to give a lot of our owned and kind of what we should have rights already away in order to just get some progress. So although the Respect for Marriage Act is a huge win, it's not the end. And the reason why I say that is because not only do we have the Supreme Court directly, a few justices have already made public statements that directly go against Orgenfell versus Hodges, which we all know is what codified same-sex marriage as the land of the law. And, you know, one of the big things for me was that now we're seeing older politicians talking about how Gen Z and young people are woke and they're brainwashed merely because they're afraid of these changes like the Respect for Marriage Act that are long overdue.
Yeah, I always push back personally and I ask people, well, define woke. That's what trips them up. Mm-hmm. Define woke, you know. I'm interested in knowing, you know, given that we have the majority of our Supreme Court being, you know, conservative leaning, even though politics isn't necessarily supposed to be brought into that space, what is this tug of war going to look like moving forward? And I ask that because the midterms of last month, Gen Z voters used their voices both on social media and in the voting booths. And a lot of Gen Z is for the progress of LGBTQ plus people. But there's a lot of, you know, boomers, so to speak, mm-hmm. you know, that are not necessarily for that. And even some of my peers. So what is this political tug of war going to look like with progress and fundamental human rights as we move forward?
I think this is a great question. I think one of the biggest things is Gen Z has to continue to make those that aren't accepting uncomfortable. And what I mean by that is continuing to stay loud, always be present, always be in the moment, and always be there when there are anti-LGBTQ discrimination, standing at our local government official offices across the nation, being loud on social media, on Twitter, on TikTok, challenging and questioning the status quo of discrimination. That is how Gen Z continues to turn the ideologies. One thing I always share is that if we're able to just educate and teach people exactly what we need to do, in order then we can already educate folks to sometimes change their mindset. And those that don't want to, we have to stay loud. And by staying loud, it's using our educated and informed Gen Z individuals, which are actually the most educated generation according to research, to be able to continue to question when things are being pushed through on a government level, federal, local, and state, that already are questioning just the mere existence of the queer and trans community.
You know, I hear the fire in your voice, and I'd like to think you're firing up some of our listeners right now. If somebody wants to take action, what's one thing they could do today?
One, register to vote. Even though the midterms are over, 2024 may seem far away, but it's not. And the second thing is, don't be afraid of when people tell you that you're less than because of who you are, because in that sense, they just want to silence the voices and the changes and the progress that they know is inevitable. They're just trying to delay that.
Moving forward in politics, I'm so fascinated, especially as you mentioned, with the upcoming presidential election. And I say upcoming because it seems like it's so far away. But if you're on edge like me, it seems like it's tomorrow.
Yes.
What can we see? What are some of your projections as we enter, you know, the 2024 presidential race? Because we know a lot of LGBT things will be on the ballot, specifically like trans related things, because that seems to be the political hockey puck of the moment. So do you have any projections or predictions as to what we might be able to expect?
Yeah, I think we can expect a large majority of Gen Z, even bigger than we saw in the midterm elections, especially since we just saw in the midterm, which are typically the lowest voting population, we saw Gen Z voters increase by 80%. So I can't imagine that in 2024, we're going to see an even bigger of a youth voting wave, and we're going to continue to see people talking about this. Before, politics was a quiet, silent thing. But now that there's so much, I would say, partisan, even on human rights issues, which there shouldn't be, now we're going to see so many more people putting their voices and opinions in the ring. And sometimes that's a good thing. And sometimes, unfortunately, that's a bad thing. But, hey, it's free speech, and we have to learn to mitigate, and we have to learn to get ahead of it. So even though 2024 is 2 years away, it's coming fast.
As we say in the South, from your lips to God's ears. Thank you so much, Brian Feminelle. I wish we had more time, but we'll have you back. LGBTQ advocate, tech entrepreneur, and U.S. Army officer, thank you for your service, not just in the military, but to our society.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate you all having me. And always remember to vote and keep saying.
And, you know, there's been a lot of conversation, you know, as the holidays are here, people are gathering around tables, reuniting with family. And I'd venture to say sometimes Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's, Kwanzaa, whatever else you celebrate during this blistery winter December.
Festivus.
Yes. It's one of those things where you come together, maybe sometimes even more than you would on Thanksgiving, which means a lot of times people might be met with family that might misgender them or be homophobic or transphobic in various ways. Well, there's a new op-ed that was released titled "The Best Way to Respond When Someone Tells You That Homosexuality Is a Sin." Now, before we dive into this, I'm interested in knowing, do you have any like go-tos? And I'm asking you this because I feel like we all are kind of met with this in some regard or another, whether you're getting it in person from a family member, whether you're getting it online in a tweet. In what ways do you respond to it, or do you just ignore these types of criticisms?
It depends on who said it. It depends on the context. But there are two things I usually say, one of which is, I'm sure you mean that in the best possible way, but you're very wrong.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But sometimes I'll also say, you seem to not understand that saying something like that is deeply hurtful, painful, and bigoted on your part. So you need to realize that just because you believe it's true doesn't mean everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
And you saying so is not godly. It's not graceful. It's not loving. It's not kind.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't always like that, but it's true.
I totally agree. And I also, you know, would push back and say a lot of the times they know it's not loving. I typically do not respond. I typically ignore it. I've done so much self-work into like fundamentally knowing who I am. And that's not to say others don't, but I don't give that stuff gas. And if I do choose to give it gas, I have just like this arsenal of like biblical texts and scriptures to also, if you tell me I'm an abomination, I got lists about you eating shellfish or animal with a hood fit for feet or mixing fabrics. You're in polyester and cotton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they also say that's an about, like, I rebut with that because, you know, you can't cherry pick to play oppression Olympics with me. Get off my back. Leave me alone. So one of the responses that I saw through this Reddit thread is someone responds and says, then don't be homosexual. It's your religion, not mine. Which also makes me think of what Whoopi Goldberg has famously always said for years on The View. If you don't agree with gay marriage, then don't get gay married.
That's all.
If you don't agree with abortion, then don't have an abortion. But you don't have the right to impose your beliefs onto me, especially if I'm not a part of that specific belief system or congregation or church. You don't have that right.
Yeah.
You know, and so there are some other ones. They say, tell them religion is unnatural. It's not found in nature, while homosexuality is found in nature and rampant, which I think is interesting because then that goes into how we all have our vices. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a new argument that's come up. Like some people, you know, drink. Some people smoke. Some people go to church, which is controversial to say, but it is a way of coping.
Thing. 100%. You know, something that I've said before, too, is like, I am so sorry that your spirituality includes judging other people.
Yeah.
And I hope that you find some healing from that.
Yeah.
And I mean it. Like, it's also
you're
meant
so
as
graceful.
Shade. But it's true, though. Like, doesn't that suck that somebody else's spiritual life is centered around judging other people?
Yeah. And
how tragic is that?
And I love how graceful you are with that, because for the most part, I am too. You're not going to rile me up and suck my energy out, you know, in arguing with you. I don't have to argue what I know to be true. Yeah. Maybe you do.
Yeah, exactly.
But Char Jaa Sell doesn't.
Yeah, and the thing I think about too is like you don't change hearts and minds by having a competition about who's wrong. You know, so I try to be in a good place about it and leave them something that maybe they'll contemplate later. But sometimes I'm just very mean. Like, yeah. You got to catch me in the right generous place to not be a jerk to you.
Yeah. I'm going to read a few more responses before we head out. Someone says, you know, the same book you used to condemn me also says you can stone your wife for disobedience and sell your daughter into slavery. Also, anything unnatural, such as glasses and manufactured medicine, is also a no-no. Don't practice those rules, huh? It's almost like you're choosing what works for you, which is, you know, and it's all subjective. That's also been one of my gripes when it comes to certain religious texts, because people go to church homes and go to religious institutions that best suit them.
Yes.
If you are a single mother with a baby daddy, you ain't going to the church where the pastor's in the pulpit condemning single mothers with no husband. You know what I'm saying? So it's like everybody, you can go to one church. You can go to four different churches on one Sunday and have someone preach from the same scripture and get four different interpretations. So everybody's finding what works for them. That's the point I'm trying to make. Someone also mentioned what I just said. Are you wearing multiple types of fabrics, fibers in your clothes? And then the last one I'll read. Someone said, like quoting scripture, they say, I always tell them it says straight to hell, not gay to hell. So I guess you're the one with a hot destination in your future.
Ah!
It gets them every time. It gets them every time. So it's subjective. And, you know, you all, please, you know, if you feel the need to exert your energy in defending your fundamental humanity, I don't know what types of families or environments people are going to be around, but just be mindful if you know what, if you know you have that homophobic aunt or that transphobic uncle, because it's only a matter of time before it, like, bubbles up. And if you feel inclined to defend yourself, make sure you come armed. Because they never like that.
Yes.
They never like that.
Yeah, but know that you're not obligated to engage.
Yes, you are not obligated. You can disengage, which would they also don't like that.
Yeah, yeah, walk away.
Because they're looking to argue. And they look even sillier if they're trying to rile you up and you're acting like a house cat, not paying them any attention. So, Ryan, what I wanted to talk to you about, this is a true story. This is no pitch for the show. It's something that genuinely bothers me. The damn Instagram algorithm has really been upsetting me, and not in the way that you probably think I'm going to say.
Okay, because I have lots of thoughts, but...
Yeah, it has nothing to do with being shadow banned or anything like
that.
No. So what it has to do is with the suggested reels that they give me.
Okay.
And what I mean when I say that is I don't necessarily mean like on the explore page. I mean like, you know, as you're scrolling, sometimes Instagram shows you a reel of, a row of reels that they're suggesting. Now, most of my Instagram people that I follow are, you know, makeup artists. I love a good makeup trend. Chefs and cooks. I just like watching it. I'm not really in the kitchen like that anymore because who likes doing the dishes? And then, you know, I it's a lot of politics, news, friends, mutuals. I follow some guys that I find attractive. I got some IG crushes, but the what's referred to me is so hypersexualized. I'm like, who am I following that's giving me like, oh, men working out with no underwear on in very thin shorts, if you know what I mean. Or like people are like simulating like sexual activity for like punchlines, like, you know, like when she's mad at her, when her boyfriend makes her mad and I come over and visit. And it's like, I could show you some examples. Or like when she's, and I should mention, everything is very, you know, cis hetero.
Of course.
Like I'm not getting like lesbian, you know, suggestions or gay suggestions or even trans suggestions. It's very like, you know, making a baby, so to speak. But I'm like, I don't know what this is and why are hypersexual reels and accounts being suggested to me?
I mean,
there's no indication of that anywhere on my socials.
Are you bookmarking low key? Are you bookmarking things? Because what happened to me is.
Only thing I bookmark, I'm so corny. Only thing I bookmark really is like, you know, those mental health self-help pages that have affirmations. Like, I'm that girl. Or if I find a dress that I like, oh, Chloe's got that shoe. I'm going to revisit that. Or this is a photo shoot inspiration.
Yeah.
And, you know, some IG crushes I'll, you know, bookmark. But
so here's my thing. I have two different bookmark set groups. One of them is called Fit Inspo. It's hot guys working out.
Ooh.
And the other one is just hot guys. And then I actually have a third one. It's called Husband Material. But I bookmarked. See, I thought if I stopped following these accounts, it would, well, first of all, people could tell who I was following. That was embarrassing. So I stopped following a just casual bookmark.
Yeah.
But every single suggested post or reel or whatever are these hot guys. And now I have like this social media induced body dysmorphia because all I can see is what I don't have now, both in terms of my romantic and sex life, but also my physical body.
Yeah.
I mean, Instagram is a dangerous place.
The AI did it for me. That Lens app. They showed me in a sci-fi world. I said, dang, where'd she get that boob to waist ratio?
I mean,
I look like a video vixen.
I haven't done that. Is it worth it?
No, it's not. And they're saying, I mean, you got it. I should mention, it's like $4.99.
Oh, no, the end of the world.
Yeah, but they give you, like, what I do like is everything's been so original. Mm. Like, I haven't seen any, you know, copies. And so I did mine when it was, like, fresh. Like, I was one day in and I felt late on the trend. And the fact that, like, people, I think Harry Connick Jr. just did his yesterday. Someone else just did, because I follow him. Someone else just did theirs. And I'm like, you all, this is old news now. Where were you last week when everybody was filling the Instagram feed with cartoons?
But don't they say that it also like appropriates other artists' work? Because
now,
the AI does that?
I have heard that. So I feel like I'm out of the weeds because I did mine before all of this bubbled up.
Yeah. I mean, now I'm on the actual national radio saying that I know it's a thing. So now if I do it, I'm a real bad knowing person.
Well, really quickly, before we hop up out of here, here are some tips that we got from Rev Local regarding the Instagram algorithm as to why we might get some of the things that we get. So it's contingent on your relationship with the person posting the content, which makes no sense if we're not following them, but maybe we have lots of mutuals.
Okay.
Maybe 50% of your mutuals are following this person, so they're giving you that, you know, that video. Your past interest and engagement with that type of post.
Instagram
forgets nothing, I guess. The timing of the post, how often you check and browse Instagram, how many people follow you, and how much time you spend on Instagram per day all factor into what we are shown.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I still want to know the science behind
it. Are 50% of the people you know engaging with really sexual?
You know what? They might be. I just was looking at my statistics, and it was refreshing. Like, I was, you know, looking at, like, my primary audience, and there's, like, 56% of my audience is women, and the rest is men. They don't have it broken down in, like, a non-binary type
way.
But a lot of my platonic friends are gay men. So maybe so. And only God knows what the other girls are looking at.
So many questions.
Yeah. I mean, I have some, you know, cishet guys in my life, but majority of my friends are gay men. So
maybe you should do like an anonymous survey of your friends.
Oh, I know what they're following. I've seen those DMs, child.
Tell me something good.
All righty, righty, righty. We are at the end of our show with one of my favorite segments, Tell Me Something Good, that Sherry Shepherd stole for her show, by the way.
How rude.
I'm taking full credit. She took it from this show, The Morning Beat. And I'm so excited because this one story really touched my heart. So the manager of a Minnesota liquor store was surprised to come back from lunch just a few days ago to find his counter help walking around in her socks. Okay. Now let me explain to you this story.
Okay.
So this employee ended up giving her favorite pair of shoes to a man that she saw walking on the street with boxes on her feet.
Oh, wow.
I mean, on his feet, excuse me. So security camera footage revealed that this employee had given, like I said, her shoes, which was a pair of purple retro Jordans. You know
what?
How much that cost? They're retro and they're Jordans. To a man who was experiencing some houselessness. And he had, like I said, strapped boxes to his feet. This was at the Brooklyn Center Liquor Store. And her name is Talia Thomas. And locals call her Ace. Okay, now.
All right, Ace.
And it was a split second of kindness. She said it was an easy decision. He said, no one would ever give me shoes like that. And she said, well, I'm not everybody. So I wonder, these stories like this make me feel good because it reaffirms and kind of reassures that there's still some sort of goodness.
Yes.
Still, even with all of the nonsense going on, like politically and all of the news hits, we just talked about mental health. These feel good stories still exist. And the fact that Ace, I'm going to call this girl Ace, this woman Ace, like I know her.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she was able to just do this on impulse, I wonder what spoke to her.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then those are her favorite shoes. I think anybody would have contemplated over that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know what trivial thing I wonder?
Yeah.
What did she wear on her way home?
Oh yeah, since she was walking around there in socks.
Yeah.
Maybe can you Postmates shoes? I'm sure you could do Target, send you a size 9 to the liquor store to put
right.
on,
yeah,
you know, anything.
I may try this sometime.
But you know, that's your favorite pair. That's where I would have been
wild.
Caught up. It's one thing to give away, like, the little busters that you've had.
Oh, yeah.
But your favorite pair? Congratulations. That's good.
She's going to get a sponsorship.
She's going to be blessed immensely, I'm sure.
Yes.
Like, that's got to come back tenfold. And I feel like she did this with no motivation. Like, this was genuinely... And I should mention that her boss is the one that submitted and told this story because they saw on security camera footage. So it's not like she ran to the press with this. It was her boss. So,
aww,
yeah.
What a good boss. Well, I have some good news to share with you. Ryan Murphy is going to receive the Carol Burnett Award at the Golden Globes. I don't know if you know about this. You probably do, Char. So the Carol Burnett Award goes to true legends in television.
Oh.
The first one in 2019 went to Carol Burnett herself. It's also gone to Norman Lear and Ellen DeGeneres. And
okay.
So he's the fourth ever recipient of it, and he'll get it on January 10th. And it's meant to honor someone, quote, based on their body of work and the lasting impact that their television career achievements have had on both the industry and audiences. That feels so right for Ryan Murphy. Who else has that much of an impact on culture?
And I do love his programming. He has the range, too. He does everything from Glee to American Horror Story. I want him to bring back Feud.
Yes.
I really enjoy it, Feud.
Uh-huh.
But I typically, if I hear Ryan Murphy's behind a project, I'm watching. And you know, I loved Pose. That's my assignment to producer Vanessa. She still hasn't started it. Have you ever watched Pose?
I've watched some of it, not all of it.
Okay, you need to watch all of it.
You're right.
Pose is a fantastic show. And so Ryan is also known for taking risks with new talent and new storylines and humanizing people, really.
Yeah.
And so...
In a nuanced way.
And I cannot wait to see what he does next.
Yes.
Even though I really wasn't a fan of The Politician.
Oh, really?
No, I wasn't a fan
of
that
well.
One. And what's the movie he had with...
Love, Simon? No.
No,
that
no,
wasn't
no.
That wasn't him.
Remember he had, like, the gay movie on Netflix...
Oh, yeah.
It was with Jeremy Pope.
Yes.
Yeah, and Jim Parsons.
Yes.
That was hit or miss for me.
It was fine.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining us today. It's been quite the ride. It's always fun working with you, Basham.
Likewise. Let's do this more.
We need to.
Yes.
Y'all hear that? We need to. You all have a great weekend. AJ and Michaela will be back bright and early Monday morning. And have a safe and happy holiday from me and Ryan to you.
Bye-bye.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.